This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm glad you decided to spend the next hour with me. I love these weekly conversations, and my promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your life and your health. We've got another great show today, so grab a pen and paper, your favorite beverage, and let's get started. I want to welcome my guest today, who is Susie Garcia. Susie is an award-winning registered dietitian who's creating a culture of empowered eaters by helping people create better food habits that lead to healthier living. Susie is an author, speaker, media resource, and nutrition expert. Her current book is titled Psyched to be Skinny: How to Stop Emotional Eating, Enjoy Healthy Weight Loss, and Keep it Off for Life. She's appeared on ABC, CBS, and Fox Television, as well as NPR Radio, and she has filmed more than 20 healthy cooking videos for eHow.com. Her vision is to inspire and empower everyone she encounters to lead a healthier life, because she believes that every small step you can take makes a difference. On today's show, I'll be talking with Susie about her three secrets to unraveling your food moods. Susie's message is so important for all of us. Emotional eating is really a challenge for so many people, and I'm very excited to get started with today's conversation. Welcome, Susie.
Hi, Janelle. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to start this conversation today. I want to start it by asking you to maybe explain a little bit more about your background and what it means to be a registered dietitian.
Sure. So as a registered dietitian nutritionist, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics actually just recently added nutritionist to the title, which is exciting. Basically, there are a lot of different avenues that someone can select, and for me, I'm in private practice, so I've chosen to work with individuals and do speaking engagements, you know, author type thing, as opposed to a dietitian that maybe works in a hospital or runs a food service. So for me, it's delivering expert nutrition and food information. And one of the talents I believe that I have is taking all of the complex scientific information that you learn in school and that's out there in the research studies and just turning it into a real-life conversation about, well, what am I supposed to eat?
Can you give us an example of how you take it and simplify it so people really understand it?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things, an easy example would be if, say, someone is diagnosed with high cholesterol, and so they're trying to, you know, manage how to make that change. I'll explain to them what the different cholesterol numbers mean on their lab work, because I found oftentimes they don't actually know that. So I'll do things like the HDL cholesterol is your good cholesterol. It starts with an H, so it's happy. The LDL is lousy. So just quick little tips where people can remember so that when they're looking at their own health, they're able to manage that.
I think that's great, because so often we get so much information, and it's really easy once you leave a doctor's office or leave the specialist you're having a conversation with to remember, now, what did they say? Which one is that? How do I keep it all straight? And there's so much information out there for people to get and to try to figure out what the answers are. So you're saying, since they've just changed that term, you often hear the term dietitian and nutritionist, and people use them interchangeably. So are you saying that they're both meaning the same thing with this change that they've made to your titling?
Well, I guess the easiest way to answer that question is all dietitians are also nutritionists. but not all nutritionists are dietitians because the credentialing requirements as a registered dietitian, we have to go to an accredited college, complete an internship, take a national board test, and keep up with continuing education. There are many other options out there that can certify nutritionists, and that certification sometimes is a little bit looser, so somebody may not have, completed something and still calling themselves a nutritionist, but there are, a lot of great programs out there as well. So you may find someone that says that they're a holistic nutritionist. That tends to be usually like a two-year program and may or may not require a bachelor's degree. So a lot of the difference in the terminology and having the registered dietitian has to do with the educational background and credentialing process.
Is there a reason or is there a time when someone should seek out one versus the other when they're looking for help or information?
There could be a possibility of that because oftentimes some of your nutritionists may be, they took a, 9-month coaching class online. So you may want somebody that has a little bit more experience. The other difference is as a registered dietitian, we are, part of the medical care model. So, for example, a dietitian that works in the hospital is going to be part of that team, and also it's associated with insurance. So I'm a provider on a few insurance plans, so I can actually, bill medical insurance sometimes if it's covered by that particular plan. So, that may be a difference to somebody that they, if their insurance covers that, they may want to seek a registered dietitian where their insurance will pay for it as opposed to paying out of pocket. And either way, if you're looking at, you want to be comfortable with who you work with, just because someone is a registered dietitian, if they don't have the same style or, understanding, that may not be the person that is meant for you. So it's just like kind of shopping for any other provider. You want to definitely, do your homework and see who's out there.
So do different registered dietitians have different, it sounds like they might have different focuses or different philosophies on how they approach food and eating?
Absolutely. And I think it's the same with nutritionists. It's the same with physicians. Everyone, we all have the same core, background. It just depends on what, situation someone is in and how they perceive things, how old someone is. I have a very practical approach. I'm not an extremist. So I want people to be able to make lifestyle changes that will last. And just like everybody's personality is different, you will find different approaches to a nutrition plan.
Did you adopt your style after you did your training, or did you kind of knew how you wanted to approach it and you had your style and then you took your training to actually give you the skills and expertise to do it?
I actually had my training first and completed my internship. I then, as I was working with people and doing, different roles that I had some excellent mentors and role models that I was able to emulate as far as their approach with patients and clients. And that basically evolved over time because I would see what would work. I could, if someone was coming to me for weight loss and I tried this particular approach, and if it didn't work, then I could start modifying what I was doing so that people were actually being successful. So it definitely is a learning process, and then that's part of, having continuing education and just really keeping on top of what's going on in the nutrition world.
Well, I love that you really looked at what was working and what wasn't and kind of put together part of your style and what you did and how you moved forward with that. Before we start talking about your book, I just want to ask you a question. I always ask this of all my guests. I like to ask each person what motivates them. It's really what we call, what is your big why? How has it motivated you to live a healthier life?
That is a great question. I'm glad you asked that to me as well. For me, when it comes to living that healthy lifestyle, my big why is that I just really like to be involved in life, and I want to feel good doing it. I like to be with friends. I love and cherish my family, and I want to feel good and look good when I am out and about doing things. So it's just really, and especially I think working with clients over time where their energy level is zapped and they really have a lot of serious issues going on with their health, I really want them to feel as good as I do, and I don't want to feel as poorly as they do. So, you know, my big why is just really because I want to be out there and living life and feeling good while I'm doing it.
That's a great motivator. Do you find that when most people come to you, they really know what healthy or have an idea of what healthy can feel like, or do you think they're just, they mostly come to you because they have a symptom and they really don't realize what getting rid of those symptoms can actually do? They don't realize how good they can actually feel?
I would say that it's about half and half. I think most people in their minds think that they know what a healthy lifestyle and healthy diet is and perhaps have tried something and failed before. However, there's an awful lot of people that really don't have a full understanding, just the basics of carbohydrates, protein, and fat, and how they nourish and energize your body. And I review that with everyone, regardless of what they perceive their own level of knowledge is. And every single time, someone learns something that they didn't know before. So there's definitely a little bit more of a lack of knowledge. But one of the things that is interesting with food and with diet is everybody eats. So it kind of builds in where if you had a friend that perhaps lost a lot of weight, they can say, oh, well, this is what I did, and so therefore that's what you should do. And there's a lot of conflicting advice and just the bombardment of information because everybody eats, so everybody kind of thinks that they're their own expert.
Because you can't get away from eating, where some things that you're doing, you can get rid of it and it's not in front of you, but we all need food, so we need to nourish our bodies. So people need to understand how they can use that food and how it really does fuel their body.
Exactly.
When I talk to people, I find that, like you say, they think they know it until you start having a real conversation with them, and then all of a sudden they realize that what they thought was true, they don't really understand what it does. They just think they did.
Yes, I find that a lot. You know, one of my favorite kind of conversations that is confusing when someone says the word fattening. Because when I hear the word fattening, of course, my mind goes to, is that food high in fat? Even though something could be fattening if it has too many calories, because then if you have too many calories overall, it gets turned to fat. So just little sayings like that that provide an opportunity to sort of educate, well, what do you mean when you say that's fattening? What is that perception in your mind?
That's interesting. So really listening to what they're saying and taking the conversation from there. Well, we're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about your Psyched to Be Skinny book and share some of the things from that. So this is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Most people know UPS, but did you know we offer expert advice and time-saving tools for startups?
I have a big idea, and now I have big decisions to make.
We can help you get there.
Startups need all the help we can get.
Talk with our experts and find technology that can help you automate tasks so you can do more, faster.
To grow, I need help saving time and money.
Have a one-on-one consultation with a specialist at no cost, and our shipping and tracking tools are free as well.
I want to be more efficient and streamline operations.
You can even sign up for UPS Smart Pickup, which will automatically notify a driver whenever you create a shipment online.
Wow, so I can spend more time focusing on the big picture?
You focus on your business, while we take care of the logistics.
Putting more energy toward my dreams, that would be huge.
Get expert advice for your growing business. See how at ups.com/startups.
I love logistics.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Janelle McCauley with Eat Great, Live Well Radio. We've been talking with Susie Garcia, and we're going to be talking now about emotional eating, and she's got a book called Psyched to be Skinny. Now, Susie, you're the co-author of this book with Dr. Wood. How did you come up with this book?
Well, it's a fantastic story. So Denise and I went to high school together, and we reconnected at a mini class reunion. It was probably about, I think it was 5 years ago. And she was a doctor of clinical psychology, and I'm a registered dietitian. And we started talking about our work and found that we both were dealing with similar issues with our clients regarding emotional eating. So she had written one book. It was just coming out at that time, and we just said, we need to write about this. And after a couple, we kind of shelved it for a couple of years just because we had a lot of things going on, and then we put our minds to it and put the book together, and it was a blast writing it, and it's really, we're getting fantastic feedback just from how it's helping people really change how they're thinking about their food and emotional eating and just that languaging in your mind. And so it was a great project.
That sounds interesting. It's amazing how people connect at the right time to kind of collaborate and partner together.
Mm-hmm.
So many people are challenged with emotional eating. Do you find that it's an issue at a particular age or stage, or can it happen at any time?
It can happen at any time. I do certainly believe that children will learn from their parents, and so there are some patterns that possibly are established early in life that show up later. Many times emotional eating also will occur if there's a little bit more stress going on and someone stops paying attention. But I have observed emotional eaters that are very, very young and carries all the way through into your 70s and 80s. So it doesn't really have an age or gender, you know, change. It's just many people deal with emotional eating and stress eating, things like that.
So how can people identify if they are an emotional eater or what type of emotional eater they are?
That's a great question. So in the book, we identified 10 different types of eaters, and each eater has their own chapter. And what I found is most people, when they go to the table of contents, they immediately gravitate towards one of the titles. It might be the depressed eater or the situational eater. They're like, oh, well, that's me. So some people are very, very aware of what type of eater they are. When I work with clients, I listen for cues, and then I can identify based on the types of things that they say. For example, if someone says to me, oh, well, you know, I'm heavy and everyone in my family is heavy, so it's just part of, you know, who I am, then I know that they would fit into the category of the big bone eater, which is the person that believes that they're going to be overweight because their entire family is overweight. Not to say that genetics don't play somewhat of a role. However, I've seen more often that it's the habits that someone learns that make a much bigger impact on how we eat over time.
Can you tell me kind of what, I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, growing up and some of the things that we learned from our parents, but really talk for a minute about what drives emotional eating?
Sure. What drives emotional eating is basically a thought process. It's very often that someone either has negative thoughts or incorrect thoughts related to food. For example, someone that is a depressed eater often will eat because they're filling a void. There's some type of emotional void. And very often the driver for emotional eating is that there isn't a mechanism in place to deal with some of their other problems, and so people will turn to food. So the driver tends to be lack of a ability to manage some other emotion, and it just comes out as food.
Can someone actually, is it possible to cure being an emotional eater, or is it something that once you've been an emotional eater, you have for the rest of your life?
Oh, you absolutely can cure it, because it's just, it's conditioning and thought patterns. So I'll give you kind of a interesting example for myself from childhood, and it's more of a pattern than an emotion, but it's just having to sort of change the thought process. So when I was in grade school, actually all the way through, my mom would always have 3 o'clock treats, and that's what they were called. So we got out of school, and so we got home, and it was 3 o'clock treats. And in the summer, it was 3 o'clock treats. And I actually noticed once I went off to college that it would be 3 o'clock, and I would be saying to myself, well, where's my treat? And so at that point, I realized that it was just kind of a conditioning and that I wasn't necessarily hungry. So it's paying attention to those types of things. So I was having a pattern that was part of my emotions because it was a memory from childhood that was causing me to think that I needed to eat. So it's just breaking those patterns, just like if you are trying to have your business be better or increase sales. There's just certain things that you can, our minds are amazingly powerful, and so it's very easy to just change your thought patterns and really get over those emotional eating problems.
Interesting that you talk about the 3 o'clock snack, because that's one of the things we teach in our Eat Great, Live Well program, too, is identifying what those triggers are. My husband had one where he always used to want a cookie in the afternoon, and when we kind of looked at it and what he was doing, it's not really he wanted a cookie, but he wanted that break, and that was his excuse to get up, go do it, and then finding other ways to get the satisfaction and get what you're looking for without turning to food. And I think that's something that is a great awareness that people can be, start to realize that they're turning to food when they really, it's really something else they're looking for.
That's exactly right.
Do you find that some people are more susceptible to emotional eating? And is there any research that indicates that it's something that might be genetic, or is it really just a learned behavior?
There is research on emotional eating, and I don't have any of those studies right in front of me at this time, but there is a lot of research on how the emotions and, looking at how this brain is stimulated around different foods and different emotions. So there is some scientific basis for it, and it's part of just really looking at the whole picture. There may be someone that, for example, has been diagnosed with depression. They are much more likely to have, to be a depressed eater, to fall into that category. And I also think that people that are really very busy and take on a lot of responsibility can also have some emotional eating issues because they are paying attention to everything else, and they aren't paying attention to nourishing their body. And so they will let everything else around them kind of rule, and that's where some of that emotional eating can occur. So definitely, and again, with patterns, if someone's parent was an emotional eater, it's very easy to get trapped into that.
Can you maybe share an example of a client or two that you've worked with, just something kind of how you identified what the issue was, what it was, and then maybe something simple that they could do to address that emotional eating?
Oh, absolutely. So one client, Patricia, comes to mind. She had been working with me, and she was older. I think she was like in her late 60s. And we had, I think she'd lost about between 15 and 20 pounds at the time. And she said, well, I'm going on vacation, so I'm going to end up gaining all 20 pounds back. And I said, wait, no, you shouldn't gain any back because we're working on changing your behavior. And so she falls into that category of the I deserve it eater because she basically was looking at her vacation as a free-for-all and that she was just going to eat everything. And then she'd already put it out in the universe that she was going to gain all that weight back. So we first of all talked about that every single meal on vacation did not have to be a splurge. And so we talked about where she was going to go, but the idea is that you can have a food that's maybe a little bit more indulgent because you are on vacation, but just pick which meal you're going to do that for. You don't have to splurge on breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you can enjoy things. And she was going with a group of lady friends. I said, you can share things. But it was her languaging that made me realize that she was this I deserve it all or nothing type eater.
That makes me think of women when they become pregnant, how often they just totally throw healthy eating out the door and just eat whatever is there, and they'll put on 40, 50, 60 pounds, which is too much to put on because they think, oh, well, I've got an excuse. I'm eating for two. I don't have to worry about it. And then afterwards, they're thinking, what did they do? You know, why did they do that? Because it just doesn't make any sense. But they feel they deserve it. They can kind of take that break.
Yep, that's an exact example. So, again, and then another client, Sarah, she was an anxious eater. And the anxious eater is, she was very, very typical. She worked, she had kids, she was, managing this really crazy, hectic schedule. So she was eating in her car a lot, getting fast food a lot, picking up takeout for her family because she was always in a hurry doing things. And so that, you know, her issue was just a little bit of time management, but also the fact that she didn't really know, she didn't pay attention to how food tasted. So one of the things that I talked to her about was just really mindfully eating. And I don't know if you have tried this, you can use a raisin, or sometimes you can use like a little Hershey's Kiss or something like that, but where you actually take a couple of minutes to eat and savor and think about how that food feels. So we actually did that exercise, and it's something fun that, you know, the listeners can go try right now, because when you take one little bite and you think about, okay, what's the texture? How does it taste? What am I tasting first? And realizing how much flavor is actually in foods when you take the time to taste it, it will make your food much more enjoyable, and it'll also slow you down so that you're not just eating without any thought process.
I love that. I love that. One of the things that we teach people to do is to really savor their dessert. So to take 3 to 5 really small bites, but really take and taste and savor each one of them. Then put your fork down, have a conversation for 15 or 20 minutes. And if you want more, repeat that. But really, when you're eating it, really enjoy it. And what people find is when they come back for the second round, which they always think they need, they realize they don't have that intense flavor. So it really does make a difference. We're going to take another short break. And when we come back, I want to let our listeners know that if you're an emotional eater, we're going to talk with Susie about some steps that you can take to identify and address that. Stay tuned. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. Our annual International Conference and Business Expo is on August 7th through the 10th, and we not only have a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders, but this year you will be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only, conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, interacting, and sharing with other conference members. This will be an educational, inspirational, motivational, and transformational experience. Oh yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night. Dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas, Walton Stout. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details on how you can be part of this life-changing experience.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Susie Garcia, and we're talking about emotional eating, and we're going to share some tips and some things on being an emotional eater. But before we do that, I want you, Susie, if you'd share what we talked about on break. I think our listeners would really love that.
Oh, sure. It was. I loved that you recommend 3 to 5 bites, because one of the things that I tell my clients is to use 3 polite bites. And so you don't need the entire dessert, and you actually can kind of use that if you're at a buffet or something like that. But when you take that first bite of a dessert or a food, that's when you get that flavor blast and that, oh my gosh, this is so good. And, you know, that's when you have that sort of connection with the food. The second bite, you get that a little bit. But by the time you get to, you know, 3rd, 4th, 10th bites, everything tastes the same. So you really can get that amazing feeling that you're looking for with, oh, I have to try this dessert, just within, you know, 3 polite bites, and then you can be done.
I like that. And it's so true when I think about eating, and, you know, so often you're eating and you're thinking, I'm not really even, it doesn't even taste that good. Why am I eating it? So it's really the awareness, and I think if people start thinking about how it tastes and really paying attention to it, they'll eat a lot more thoughtfully, and they'll actually eat a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to shift our conversation a little bit and ask you about your 3 secrets to unravel your food moods. And first, I'd like you to explain what you mean by food moods.
Well, food mood is just sort of a different way to talk about emotional eating. You know, when you're in a certain mood, sometimes people will be, oh, I'm depressed, so then I have to eat. So it's just a different twist on emotional eating is your food mood. You know, what are you, how are you feeling, and is that affecting what you are eating? Because sometimes people don't realize that their mood does affect their food choices. And so I've come up with 3 secrets, which this is actually not specifically in the book, because this is more for really sharing something that people can walk away with right now. And the first secret is to weigh on Wednesdays. And there are a couple reasons behind that. One is it's easy to remember because they both start with a W. The part that goes with your food mood is most people will jump on the scale first thing Monday morning because they're wondering how they're doing, and that's probably the worst time to weigh because weekends tend to be where people will be a little bit more indulgent, and so it can affect your mood and motivation level if the scale moved up instead of down. So by weighing on Wednesdays, your midweek gets a little bit more realistic. And the other part of that is really to not be so so focused on your weight. I have clients that will come to me and they're weighing themselves every single day. Sometimes they're weighing themselves in the morning and again at night. And actually weighing once a month is fine. Or even my co-author Denise, she just keeps a pair of jeans that she wants to be able to fit into, and she'll put those on every, you know, a couple of times a month and make sure they still fit, because sometimes people are very focused on their weight and they get it causes more anxiety when they're just looking at those numbers all the time. So by weighing on Wednesdays, you're really keeping yourself motivated and not getting overly anxious about what it says on the scale.
I like that. Because you're right, most people do on Monday, and then they all of a sudden they've been eating over the weekend or maybe have a drink or two. And I love having a pair of pants or something that you want to fit into to try that versus the scale. That actually gives you probably a better result because the scales, you know, go up and down so much.
They do, and especially for women. Our water weight fluctuates a lot more than men. So it can be really, really self-defeating if you're weighing yourself every day. And, you know, if you work out, then your muscles will make you retain a little bit of water if you've been doing some weightlifting. So the pair of pants work great, or what, you know, whatever type of, you know, a suit or something like that, or a dress, any of those are great ideas too.
Mm-hmm. And you've got two other tips for us?
I do. Okay, so number two also starts with a W, so everyone can easily remember all three of them, is to walk. Because walking or any type of activity is going to help you lose weight if that's part of your goal. It also will help clear your mind. And that's part of, you know, when you're talking about food moods, oftentimes people will go right to the refrigerator instead of getting some activity or looking at things. So if you take just 5 to 10 minutes in the morning and 5 to 10 minutes in the afternoon and get up away from your desk if you're working, or just step away and walk for a little bit, it gives your mind a chance to clear. And there's so many benefits to exercise. So there's the taking a quick walk to clear your head, but there's also the long-term benefit of regular exercise. The standard recommendation is to have 10,000 steps a day. And when you exercise, you increase your endorphins, so you have a lot of fantastic benefits with being able to be in a better mood and to be less depressed and just have your chemical balance. The balance is better. But one thing that I suggest for regarding the 10,000 steps, and there's all kinds of pedometers and, you know, Fitbits and Jawbones and things that you can put on, is just get your baseline. Don't go out and try to do 10,000 steps if you are not very active. Find out how many steps your baseline is. Maybe it's only 4,000. Then you can gradually add 1,000 steps, you know, for a week, and then add another 1,000, or maybe you can bump up, you know, 2,000 more. Because one thing that I've found with working with clients, if you go too far forward from where you are, if someone's only walking 2,000-3,000 steps a day and they go out and try to do 10 or 12, they'll actually be really sore and uncomfortable because they're not used to it. Their back might hurt, their knees might hurt, and then all of a sudden they don't do anything for another week because they're so sore. So if you just add a little bit of activity at a time, then you're going to be able to maintain that over the long term. So the second tip is walk. And number three, which is probably my favorite and can make the biggest difference, is to write it down. And that would be keeping a food diary or a journal of some type where you are really writing down and logging what you eat. And you can do it with any of the apps that are out there. There's all kinds of ways to do it, but that writing it down does a few things. It gives you an accountability to yourself so that you're paying attention, like, I don't know if I want to eat that because I have to put it on paper, but it also can help you learn to identify where you may have some emotional eating occurrences or habits that just weren't front of mind. For example, you may find that, you know, you're looking at your food diary and there's a certain day where you maybe overate, and it happened to be the day that some friend called that tends to really complain a lot on the phone and they got you all worked up, or that if you went too long between meals, you overate. So that might not be an emotional issue, but it's a busy issue. So writing down what you eat can make such a huge difference. It helps me work with my clients because then I can see what's going on and make recommendations. But that accountability to yourself and knowing what's going on with your own food is extremely helpful.
Do you find that writing it down raises people's stress levels?
For some people it does. It depends, and I'll be able to tell when I'm, you know, within the first meeting with a client whether that's going to cause them more anxiety, and we may not start with writing it down. But most people really are, after they've done it, are so much more thankful for that information. So I would say the majority of people immediately find it beneficial, and there is a section that do have a little bit more anxiety with writing it down or thinking that it's an assignment or, oh, I forgot. And so, again, that's at the beginning of the interview where I talked about that I try to be very practical with clients. I work with them to figure things out, what will work to benefit them.
Do you find that a lot of people, when they're writing it down, are really, really include everything in truth? Not that they're not, I don't know if truthful is the right word, but they tend to underestimate what it is. They don't put it all down.
Some do. For the most part, they will be pretty honest. One of the things that I do, however, when I have a follow-up visit with a client, I'll just ask them, well, what did you eat yesterday? Even if I'm looking at their food log or whatever, and we'll just go over it, and then I'll say, well, did you have any snacks? So I'll prompt them on things, and sometimes that can help. The majority of people that are really wanting to benefit their health, they know that that's going to be a tool that will help them. And so they want to be able to make those improvements. And I think a lot of times when they're writing stuff down that they're wishing they weren't writing down, it can generate a little bit of change down the road. So I find that it's pretty accurate. The inaccuracies tend to be somebody gets busy and they just didn't write down anything at all.
Well, which is, I think, what a lot of the issues stem from, is we're so busy going in so many directions that it's hard to eat mindfully. I think a lot of people eat mindlessly. They'll snack, they'll pick things up, and they're not even really paying attention and thinking about what they're doing. So the journaling in that regard probably does help. We used to do food journals and found that people had such a struggle with it. So now we work and have them do a mood journal, because we find that by writing down how they're feeling and what they're thinking before they decide to eat, and then afterwards, they can really get a good handle of what they're doing, and that in itself starts to change their behavior.
Yeah, that's great. I actually will do a combination with some clients where they have their food journal and their mood journal, and use a hunger scale and an emotional scale. So it's not necessarily the exact same thing for every person, which is what sounds like, you know, the way that you work with your clients and me as well, is that you have to be adaptable to what people's lifestyles are.
Mm-hmm. When I love asking questions just like you, where I'll ask people how important getting healthy and eating healthy is to them, and they usually say that's really important with a high number. And then the second question is, well, so how often do you really think about and pay attention to what you're eating? And they'll realize that's a low number. And it's like you could see the light bulb go off, because it's like, oh, I'm saying it's really important, but I really don't pay any attention to it. There's a disconnect. So we're going to go ahead and take one more final break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the suggestions you have for people for eating healthy, and some of the rules that you have around that. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, CEO and founder of eWomen Network. Do you have a message you're dying to tell the world? Have you always wanted to host your own radio show? Join our EWN Radio Network team, just like Jonelle McCauley, and give your message the voice it deserves. For details, visit ewnradionetwork.com/host.
You're listening to Jonelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Jonelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Susie Garcia, and we've been talking about emotional eating and how it really affects your health and having a great conversation. And I want to use our last few minutes together to ask you just a couple more questions. The first one is, do most people that have emotional eating issues or talk about emotional eating issues, do they have weight issues, or does emotional eating also come from clients who have other health concerns, or is it both?
It's a little bit of both, but I would say, just looking back on my client population, I would say probably 75% of the emotional eaters are overweight, because that when you're looking at emotional eating, it's you're turning to food instead of something else, and that those excess calories are just going to end up as excess weight for most people. So, for example, if someone comes in with high cholesterol, that might be their issue that they're coming in for, and through working with them, we may discover that some of their habits are tied to emotional eating. So the majority of emotional eating does tend to have a weight component. I do see people that it's more of they may be within their normal body weight, but they do have some emotional eating issues that are causing them to choose, I guess for lack of a better term, junk food, and so they don't feel that good. So their energy level is zapped, or they might have a little bit of extra belly fat, even though, you know, on the outside they look like they're at a really good weight, they maybe still don't really feel good. However, again, more often than not, there's a weight issue.
When you work with clients, do you set up strict rules regarding food? And are there any things that you tell people that they should really stay away from and not eat?
I am not super strict. The only clients that I work with that have really strict guidelines are clients that have gastrointestinal disorders, and we're going through an elimination diet process, because then they have to take out a lot of food so that we can add them back in. But in general, for somebody that's losing weight, I do have guidelines that I strongly encourage, but I don't take out every single thing out of their diet. If I think they might benefit from them, for example, detox type plans or a paleo, things like that are, you know, very popular right now, and you're taking out gluten and dairy and alcohol and coffee and all kinds of things. And I think certainly there are some people that are, you know, have a sensitivity to gluten, or and that maybe we shouldn't be over having that. But I will not just automatically take everything out of somebody's diet, because if you do that, then they don't learn how to work in the foods that they maybe like. So I really go in steps. Some people can handle more guidelines all at once than others. I suppose, as far as, you know, foods that I tell people not to eat, I really encourage plant-based eating, natural foods, avoiding processed foods. So trying to get them away from those foods is one of the big goals, and making sure that they're staying hydrated, things like that, and I'll give guidelines as far as what times to eat, but it isn't the exact same for every single person, and so every person gets individualized attention, and if I have a personality that is really rule-based, they might get a few more rules than somebody that just wouldn't work that way and they wouldn't do anything and it would just make them freeze up. So that's part of, I guess, my food mood is figuring out what personality type that person is so that I can give them the best information that's going to help them the most in the way that they'll use it the most.
I like that approach because I think when we tell people that they can't eat something, that's all they want to eat is what you told them they couldn't eat.
Oh, it absolutely is that way. For example, what's a food that you don't really care for very much?
I don't know. There isn't much eggplant.
Eggplant. So if I said, okay, you can't eat any eggplant, you seriously would go to a restaurant and see, like, eggplant parmesan, and you'd be like, you know, I think I want to have that. It's really a funny opposite effect.
I know. It's like when you buy a car, you know, you want a particular car and you never see it anywhere until you go to buy it and then all of a sudden it's everywhere.
Yep.
It's the same kind of thing when someone says you can't have something or you got to stay away from it. That's all you want. But I've also known a lot of people that say they can't eat gluten or they're gluten-free. And I was with someone at a conference last summer and she said she was gluten-free and all she did was ate gluten the whole time. So I said at the end of the week, how do you feel? And she said she felt fine. She didn't have a gluten sensitivity. Somebody just said, don't eat gluten. So she took it out of her diet. But then I think sometimes people just eat things because they don't really understand what it's doing for their body or that they should eat that way. And then all of a sudden they stop following it. It doesn't make any sense. They need
no,
to understand why they're doing it and how they feel.
Yeah, and one of the goals with, you know, sort of, you know, just talking about like modifying, reducing highly processed foods and getting things down is as people start feeling better, that's the motivation to keep going. When all of a sudden someone is eating more vegetables and they're doing the suggestions that I give them and they start feeling better, then it's like, oh, well, I want to keep doing this because I feel great. And so rather than giving them more rules to follow, they're kind of changing their own path because they're feeling so much better.
I absolutely agree, and I think that people really should, after you eat, I tell people that you can normally tell if a food doesn't agree with you fairly quickly just by paying attention to how you feel after a meal. Are you, you know, tired? Is your stomach hurting? You know, what's going on? I mean, I find for me, most foods affect me pretty quickly if they're not going to agree with me. And I've just really learned to pay attention to that, and it's made such a difference in how I feel, in my energy, and in my overall health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this has been a great conversation, and people absolutely understanding emotional eating and how it affects them is something that everyone needs to learn more about. Can you tell our listeners how they can get more information from you and about, you know, the things that you have to offer?
Absolutely. So I've got a couple things that I would love to share. One is an event that Denise and I are putting on. It's going to be September 20th in Lafayette, California, and it's called Happy Healthy You. And so that is going to be a fantastic event. We've got a Facebook group, Happy Healthy You, that is an open group that we would love to have everybody jump on and just sort of share their, you know, recipes or what they did today. So that's going to be a fantastic event. It's for women. And the way that someone can find more information about me, and actually I have a guide that I wrote. It's called 7 Simple Steps to a Healthier You. And that's where you'll find, there's 7 simple steps, but it'll give you an insight as to how I work with clients because they're very practical solutions that someone can implement right away. And that download can be found at yourhealthylifechoices.com.
Perfect. And we will have a link to that, and so that they can reach you at eatgreatlivewellradio.com also, so they'll be able to get you there too. Can you give our listeners just one action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthier future for themselves and the ones they love?
Yes, I can. One of the things that we were talking about, plant-based, and I really would love for everyone this week to eat one different vegetable that they haven't eaten either ever or that they haven't had in a long time. I think most of us get stuck in the romaine lettuce salad with some tomatoes on it and green beans, and there are so many veggies out there, and so I just encourage everyone to try one new vegetable.
I love that tip, and one of the things my daughter-in-law does that I absolutely love is when she's taking the kids shopping, she gets them to pick out something of a different color, and it's amazing how when you get your kids to go and pick something out, how they eat it because it's their choice, even if you think they'd never touch that. So maybe they can also take their kids and get their kids involved in picking out. Maybe everyone in the family can pick out one new vegetable this next week.
That would be great. And the color idea really works well with kids. You can do a different color every week or every day. So one day it's you go through the colors of the rainbow.
And I love that tip.
Yep.
I love that.
So vegetables.
Yep, vegetables. That's a great tip. We want to thank you for your time today, Susie. And I want to remind everyone those three tips that you shared. It's, you know, weigh on Wednesday, walk, and write it down. But I want to thank you very much for your time and sharing about emotional eating and things people can do.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure joining you on your show.
So I want to thank everyone for spending the last hour with me. Until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make each day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourselves and your family. Be sure to join me next week so that we can build a healthier relationship with food together. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week, and remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.